in Dubai. I'm traveling the world on my jet, making millions every month. Not worried about nothing. And then when I see it's a chance for me to do a heist, a quick heist, I'm gonna let y'all know this. Y'all can say what y'all want to say. At the end of the day, I'm the smart one, because I don't care if you write good about me, you write bad about me, just keep writing about me.
And then come storming headlong into a debate.
Hey, Chris, you did.
All of these were refuted. Even the New York Times piece and The Guardian retracted them because they were taken for a right.
I mean, you look at those images, who's only about that money to run cover for this criminal operation.
To all Muslims growing up during my time in America, I am sorry on behalf of America
for
the way that you were treated. That it is so unacceptable. When I go back and I re-examine that propaganda, that brainwashing that took place in the classroom to make me scared, so I didn't even know what a Muslim was.
You know where the Muslims were hiding the Jews? They were hiding them in
We know there are many benefits to the use of black seed, according to the authentic statements of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. That's why I use the black seed by Tasneem, and 50% of the profits from your order will go towards establishing the Deen Center, the Masjid and Mega Dawah Center. Use promo code The Deen Show for 15% off. Greetings of peace. Now, before we get into this groundbreaking news, is Floyd Money Mayweather involved in one of the biggest scams of his life with a group called United Hezbollah, knowingly or unknowingly, as they are using Floyd Mayweather as a puppet poster child to collect more and more money in this scam? And we know Floyd Mayweather seems like he worships that money, but we'll get into that next. Now, after our last show with award-winning journalist Max Blumenthal.
Guys out here to support Israel?
Yep. Radical Muslim must be defeated unless we're going to all ruin the whole Western civilization.
Because Israel is for Jews since the beginning of the Bible. That's number one. Number two, the Arabs have no right to be there.
They are forcing us to kill their children to defend our children.
How much do we have to bomb them before there's peace?
No matter how long, they must be bombed.
Yeah, how many schools do we have to blow up before there's peace?
Former writer for the New York Times, Los Angeles Times. Now he's the editor-in-chief of The Gray Zone. He's also Jewish, by the way. After we had our last show where Max debunked what Chris Cuomo was reporting on, Chris Cuomo reached out to us, insisting that we bring him on with Max several times. We had set this up, but finally, when it came down to it, Chris Cuomo backed out. But Max is still here, ready and waiting.
This is the Deen Show.
Dude, I love you very much. I love all the work that you're doing.
When I was ready to talk about it, I would only talk to you.
And I was explaining how much respect I have for the faith of Islam.
Welcome to the Deen Show. The Deen Show.
Max Blumenthal, how are you?
Good. I'm still here. If Chris Cuomo wants to jump on, you know, if he can spare any time away from the gym. I mean, I go to the gym, but like, you know, I look normal. He's like, he looks like Lou Ferrigno. I mean, come on, man. Pick up an alternative media outlet. Follow the Deen Show. Follow the Gray Zone. Find out what's actually happening. Don't just go into a 46-minute Israeli propaganda film designed to justify a genocide and depoliticize and decontextualize the entire crisis of Palestine and consider that to be the truth, and then come storming headlong into a debate and then back out when you realize you have no idea what you're talking about. And that's what Chris Cuomo did. Am I wrong? I mean, why, isn't that what happened?
All right, so I'm not going to get into the back and forth that me and him had, but he did. He reached out to us. And when I first saw this, I actually commended this. He said, look, don't talk about me. Talk to me. And I was like, you know what? That seems like the honorable thing to do. Let's talk. We need more people, reasonable people to sit and talk. There's a lot of programming, conditioning that's going on. And the first part, I think, was getting to the table and talking. And he had insisted. We didn't reach out to him. He reached out to us. And we went back and forth. And it wasn't once, twice, he insisted that we bring you, Max Blumenthal, on the program. And we actually jumped on a call. We also had a call, me and him. We spoke on the phone. And from there, it was set. It was like, we're going to make this happen. But then when it came, and then we had a date fixed. I actually think we had a date fixed, Max. We had a date with you. So then he canceled on that date. And then we were waiting for him to reschedule. But at the end, he backed out. He said that he got some new deal where he can't do other podcasts. Right. That was
except that he just did Tucker's show.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's another one here, and I wanted to get your reaction to this. It was the PBD podcast. He also was on that recently. I don't think we should be seeing him on any other shows after his back out with Max.
Where's his? Yeah, what deal does he have? I mean, his whole time with Tucker, he was just whining about how he doesn't have any deals.
Oh, you saw that? I didn't see that interview.
It was just about how I watched bits and parts.
I was looking forward to. Yeah, I was really looking forward to it. It really seemed like it would have been a nice conversation because I liked his approach that he was saying we need to have more civilized discussions. We need to talk. And I was elated to see that he was stepping up, but a little disappointed that he backed out.
I mean, I'll meet anyone where they are, and I'm not going to, just launch some personal attack on someone because they don't understand. Like, I don't think Chris Cuomo has that much of a political education on Israel-Palestine. And he's been a creature of corporate media broadcast studios. But those kind of people, if some of them want to stop the regular dosage of blue pills that have been prescribed to them by the managers of their corporate media outlets, then I'm happy to have a civil discussion. I don't know if that was what was going to take place, but one thing that was certainly going to take place was he was going to have to listen to some hard truths about how he spread lies, he was lied to, and how he spread lies on his show at what is it, NN News or like I whatever the network of like people who've been pushed out of other networks is. And that wasn't going to be comfortable for him. And that's why I think he pulled out. That's why no one will debate me from the other side.
Well, that's deep. I mean, and exactly what you said, we were looking to have a nice civil conversation. It was a nice conversation to take place and ask some serious questions. And I don't want to show the video because from his last, the one that we reacted to, because I don't know if that got our video flagged, and you have to be like 18 and older to watch our last video that we did.
The obvious desire to see as many Jews utterly destroyed as possible. Families melted together on purpose.
Because some of the gruesome details that are in there that you reacted to, that now that atrocity propaganda that's being pushed, and you are one of the award-winning journalists that debunked much of this. So I want to get into this next question with this was just recently. Chris, what happened? You're not supposed to be on any podcast, but I'm not trying to bash you here, but we see you here again on this one. But this is an important question that's being asked about Ukraine. But why isn't our friend Patrick Ben David, Chris Cuomo, and others asking if Americans are happy with this same amount of money, the money being sent to fund this genocide?
I'm asking you.
Skim's going to happen.
Okay, so do you support them sending that $60 billion to Ukraine, the next $60 billion?
And now, after I give this answer, people will say, you'll never be fair to Ukraine again. No, I don't think they should give them the money. Why? No, don't clap. Don't clap. Don't clap. Don't clap. Don't clap.
We're clapping.
Just a point. This is recent. So in between the whole time, he did duck this appointment with you. Because this was just recently. Chris, you did. I mean, and that, and we have the door open. Max is ready. But how would you react to this? This is a very important, the point that he showed up here, didn't show up there. And that this question comes up about you sending money to Ukraine. But what about the taxpayers' money, sending money for this genocide, when we could fix a lot of problems at home with that money, can we?
Yeah, well, leaving the political questions aside and staying focused on Chris Cuomo, I mean, we're looking at someone who's struggling for relevancy after being pushed out of CNN. And that's sort of what his conversation with Tucker focused on. Tucker was forced out of Fox. Tucker was forced out because he was telling uncomfortable truths night after night and touching the third rail, which is the national security state in the U.S. It's supposed to be bipartisan. You don't discuss Ukraine aid. You don't discuss war with Iran. It's all, something we all agree on. And Chris Cuomo was pushed out because there are allegations made against his brother. He comes from this political dynasty. His name is what essentially got him on CNN. His brother was the governor of New York. He'd won an Emmy for basically lying about COVID day after day, but sort of telling people comforting lies about COVID. And then he was accused of sexual harassment by female staffers. Michael Tracy, an independent journalist, has raised a lot of questions about the claims about Andrew Cuomo. And Chris Cuomo was basically forced out because he was giving his brother advice on how to push back against those claims, which is sort of what families tend to do, but it was seen as a violation. It also relates to the discussion we're going to have, where when you just level claims of sexual harassment or sexual abuse at someone or at a political entity itself claiming they're systemic, that's one of the most powerful and devastating and destructive things you can do to take somebody or something out politically. And I don't think Chris Cuomo believes that his brother was fairly accused, but now we're seeing, I'll get to Chris Cuomo in a second. I guess I kind of already went down this road. I published a piece last week about focus groups and polls that had been taken of voters by the top Republican pollster, Frank Luntz, about how Israel can best justify its genocide in Gaza. And they found that the most effective way of demonizing Hamas was to accuse them of rape. 31% of respondents said that was the most effective allegation or accusation against Hamas that made them most outraged about October 7th. And that's what Israel and its cutouts in Washington and across the West have proceeded to do, accuse them of systematic rape. And we have debunked one claim after another, one demonstrably false testimony, one dubious witness after another at the Gray Zone. Other outlets, Electronic and Defada, Mondo Weiss, have done the same, to the point where the New York Times is now in an internal crisis about its article claiming to prove that this happened. Why can't Chris Cuomo see the same thing that happened to his brother happens on a much larger scale in order to influence people's opinions and generate consent for something that they would otherwise oppose, which is the wholesale destruction of an entire political and physical entity, the Gaza Strip, its government, and its people, on the basis of claims that are just completely phony, on the basis of a complete hoax? And that's the discussion I wanted to have with him. And you can see there he is in what do they call? I forget what they call Patrick Ben David's show.
PBD podcast.
And you know, Candace Owens is there. Candace Owens is there, and she's, you know, one of the leading kind of mainstream alternative right influencers. There's a studio audience. It's, you know, he's still in the spotlight. That's where you have to be if you've been pushed out of corporate media. But he doesn't have. Chris Cuomo doesn't really have a strong political education or clear political orientation to anything other than the status quo, which is going to make his struggle for relevancy in the independent or alternative media world really difficult. He's totally different than Tucker. Tucker has a really strong political anchor in social conservatism and a skepticism about American foreign policy or neoconservatism that keeps him relevant no matter where he is. Chris Cuomo doesn't have that. And so it actually puts Chris Cuomo in a difficult position anytime he is confronted with people, even people like Candace Owens, who know clearly where they stand. And what he's saying right there, journalists aren't supposed to have opinions. Well, people don't believe that anymore. Nobody believes that about journalists. Everyone knows journalists have opinions and they launder them behind their fake objective headlines and clinical language that they produce fake news. So he needs to drop the mask and start telling people where he really stands. The problem is he doesn't really know. He doesn't know that much about these issues. I'm still here to help educate him about something from, I think, a unique position, because I grew up in Washington, D.C. I got to know politically powerful people. I got to know politically powerless people. And I also as you said, I'm Jewish. So it wasn't like I, you know, was going to Ramadan iftars and hearing people talk about the horrors being inflicted on Palestinians. It was something I had to learn for myself. My first experience with it was going on the free Birthright Israel trip for Jews. All Jews 18 to 25 in the U.S. can get a free 10-day trip to Israel. So that was really my first experience with it that had raised major questions for me. And, you know, I think someone like Chris Cuomo could benefit from hearing about that experience and about what's actually happening, but it's not going to happen. I thought the same thing could have happened with Bobby Kennedy, someone who I actually have known. We never talked about Palestine because I never knew that he had these extreme views that he's expressed on the presidential campaign trail. He told Jimmy Dore that he would debate me or discuss these issues with me. It's very clear he has no idea what he's talking about. He's completely ill-informed, and he's making a fool of himself by being a Kennedy from Camelot and accusing Palestinians of being the most pampered people on the planet with aid. So, you know, I think either of them could benefit from an engagement, but they're afraid. They're clearly afraid, and they're running scared. And the political grassroots in the U.S. see that and has lost respect for them.
Are we talking about
RFK Jr., Bobby Kennedy Jr.?
We're talking about, okay, yeah, environmental activist.
Well, he's now running for president as an independent.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's basically, from my point of view, it looks like he's been taken in and maybe even bought by a wing of the Israel lobby.
Isn't that an unholy Shmuley, exactly, buddy, that you talk?
And who is Shmuley? Okay. Shmuley Botia, he's like obsessing over Candace Owen, and they're having this war on Twitter. Shmuley's, I mean, he would be irrelevant. I mean, he would be like panhandling in Times Square right now if it weren't for the fortune of the Adelson family. And the Adelson family resuscitated his career. Their fortune comes from the Sands Casino Empire in Las Vegas, from Sheldon Adelson, who died. His wife still controls his empire. They are a channel for Israeli influence in the United States, specifically through the Likud party of Benjamin Netanyahu. He helped fund Benjamin Netanyahu's career in Israel. He was Trump's largest contributor after Trump, when Trump ran in 2016 and 2020. He put up a lot of the money for moving the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And it was very close to Jared Kushner as well. And all this, and Shmuley's functions as the Adelson bagman. He's basically a conduit for Adelson's money. And Shmuley comes in out of nowhere after RFK makes this comment at a dinner that was sort of supposed to be off the record in New York, but you know, different reporters had been taping. RFK made some comment about vaccines and the Holocaust, something that you knew was going to come. The New York Post made a big deal about it. He gets accused of anti-Semitism, predictably. Then Shmuley starts putting out ads accusing RFK of being a Nazi. And then what he does, wow, like a typical race hustler, this is how all the race hustlers work, is they either create a crisis or they exploit a racial crisis. And then Shmuley comes in, tells RFK, look, I can make this all go away and you can get paid, wow, if we do an event together. So for Shmuley, he gets to be identified with a Kennedy. They do a public event in New York. And then what I think happened is the Adelson money starts flowing in. And, you know, RFK, I mean, he's wealthy, he's inherited money, but you don't want to put your own wealth into a presidential campaign, and you can always be a lot wealthier. So he winds up doing an event. This was like kept kind of on the low. It was publicly advertised, but not that publicly. RFK recently did this bizarre event to raise money for Shmuley's security team. And sitting on the panel with RFK was Miriam Adelson, the late wife of Sheldon Adelson. So I think my theory is RFK has basically been bought by Netanyahu's gang in the U.S. And that's why he's had to run away from a debate with me. And also just would have made him look terrible Chris Cuomo, I assume, just doesn't want to actually have one, you know, just kind of, I mean, I wasn't hoping to have like an intellectual beatdown, but he clearly doesn't know a lot, and he didn't want to come in and just be kind of educated on an issue. For him, that would be humiliation.
My intention was really to have a heart to heart with him to try to turn on, get that humanity, because it's very clear. You're Jewish, I'm Muslim, and this is a human thing. And we're trying to create awareness of this and just get this truth out. And that was my intention. My intention was to have you guys talk, to have him listen to these facts, not fiction, and start reporting the truth, not lies, not tailor-made bits and pieces of atrocity propaganda that you've debunked. You've been on the front line debunking much of this stuff that's out there. And on your last point, people can go and see and read more. This is from your X page, the sheer existence of this cartoonish, race-hustling pseudo-rabbi does more to ignite anti-Semitism. And just on that point, anti-Semitism, it's you're not anti-Semitic. You're Jewish, right?
Well, I mean, you could be anti-Semitic and Jewish, and I get accused of that, but I don't.
I'm not anti-Semitic. It's against I want to make this clear. I'm a Muslim. It's against Islam. It's anti-Islam to be anti-Jewish, and I just want to bring this point home, Max. Before we go on, I want to let not just myself speak on it. I want to bring a qualified rabbi in on this.
Palestinian groups, leaders, military groups saying, we have nothing against Jews. We tolerate Jews. We lived with Jews thousands of years together. The 300,000 people left Spain. Where did they live to? China? Japan? Australia? No. They left to Turkey. They left to Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco. Albania in the Second World War, it was a small Muslim country, and they had a few thousand Jews there. Nazis Germany has occupied Albania. But none single Jew was killed in Albania. You know where the Muslims were hiding the Jews? They were hiding them in mosques, in basements, in all types of places. And they saved all these 5,000 Jews in Albania. We're going to live together as the same as it was everywhere, as the same as Jews lived in Turkey, Algeria, Morocco, in Iran, till now, peacefully, in harmony, without any problems.
I just wanted to make that point clear.
Well, you know, where my family comes from, and the most of my family from the kind of Pale of Settlement in Eastern Europe between what is now Russia and Ukraine, before the Holocaust, before the pogroms, but kind of during the pogroms and after, there was a group called the Socialist Bund, Jews who were mostly Russian speakers, and they were anti-Zionist. They rejected the colonization of Palestine. They wanted to stay where they were and to have a socialist government that would end the pogroms, end anti-Semitism, bring them further into society and develop the society for the benefit of everyone. And then there were the Zionists. And the Zionists benefited. This is one way in which the Zionists, who are considered an extreme minority, who are considered messianic fanatics by the majority of Jews before World War II, they benefited from the Holocaust in many ways. And one way is that most members of the Socialist Bund were killed. And so this powerful political force within Jewish life basically disappeared. Then they started this fantasy, completely false claim that Jews went like sheep to the slaughter, and they willingly went off to the gas chambers or to the camps. And you look at the helpless people in Gaza, people who don't have weapons, being marched south from the destruction, from the ruins of Gaza City or Deir al-Balah in the middle of Gaza to southern Gaza. And they aren't sheep to the slaughter. They are not people who want to be ethnically cleansed. They're just defenseless. That's what the position most Jews were during World War II, However, 200,000 Jews participated in partisan operations, guerrilla operations against Nazi German occupiers. Many Jews fought in the Russian Red Army as well. And so this idea that they went like sheep to the slaughter is another Zionist fantasy that they use to justify the Jewish state, that we need a Jewish state so that Jews will finally stand up for themselves. Except who are they actually going to be fighting? Not the Nazis. They're going to take out the Palestinians as punishment for what Germany did to them. And Germany will fund them to do so, as we now see. So there was always this strong tradition of anti-Zionism in Jewish life that was wiped away by the Holocaust, the Zionist exploitation of it, the way that the transatlantic axis that from Berlin to Brussels to Washington kind of displaced the guilt for the Holocaust onto the Palestinians. And now we're in a civil war in the Jewish world. I'm an anti-Zionist Jew. You can see that there are thousands and thousands of us who are participating in actions, shutting down the Capitol for a day to protest the Gaza genocide, taking over Adam Schiff's victory party in the California Senate race to chant for a ceasefire. We're out there, but we're still kind of a minority when you have what you could call a Jewish establishment. And I don't mean the overall political establishment in the West. I mean, within Jewish life, the Jonathan Greenblatts, the Shmuley Botiaks, the Sheldon Adelson acolytes, the Haim Sabans, the Israel lobbyists, the, you know, heads of the all of these you know, Jewish federations that exist in cities across America. They have the resources. They have the U.S. government on their side. They have basically defeated us up until this point. And we have been unable to stop this genocide, but it doesn't mean that it's being carried out in the name of all Jews or that there is a Jewish consensus. In fact, if you look at polls taken of Jews in the United States, I'm trying to remember, I think it was a Harvard poll, but I'm going to have to go back and I can't remember the polling agency, but there was a recent poll showing 50% of American Jews support a ceasefire now, 38% oppose. Nice. The majority of Jews who oppose a ceasefire are over the age of 60. So the younger generation of Jews wildly supports a ceasefire. And then you have this organization called TRUA, which is a liberal, I would call them liberal Zionists. They're mainstream liberal Jewish rabbis. And they finally issued a call for a ceasefire. And when they did, something like 400 rabbis signed on. These are like mainstream rabbis in major American cities calling for a ceasefire. So increasingly, as this goes on, I think the momentum is shifting a little bit within the Jewish world. But this is like a long way of explaining how ridiculous it is to call an anti-Zionist Jew an anti-Semite.
I want to get into the next groundbreaking story because you reported, you've uncovered this scam that's happening with these relief organizations who are pushing these lies out there. You are in the front lines of doing this independent award-winning journalism, and you uncovered this. And Floyd Mayweather, Money Mayweather, he is actually a puppet poster child for this exact scam organization that's scamming the people. Now, the question was, and I opened the show, is Floyd Money Mayweather, is he knowingly or unknowingly, is he a part of this scam? This is a huge story. I don't think anybody else has reported on it. We're reporting on it here. So I want to get into that. But first, I want to also commend, I want to be fair and balanced. I want to commend Chris Cuomo, who had Bassem Youssef on his program. And Bassem Youssef is also quoting some of your work in there, and he's uncovering this same story in this organization. Let's have a look.
October 7th is a atrocity. It's a terrorist attack. It's terrible. Anthony Blinken went on in front of Congress, and he testified about an incident.
A family of four, a young boy and girl, 6 and 8 years old, and their parents, around the breakfast table. The father, his eye gouged out in front of his kids. The mother's breast cut off. The girl's foot amputated. The boy's fingers cut off before they were executed. And then their executioner sat down and had a meal.
That is a direct testimony from Zaka and Hadzullah United.
They killed the husband first. They took his eyes out. I saw the body by myself. They cut the breast of the woman. They cut the leg of girl.
two relief groups from Israel that they have actually been exposed that all of the stuff that they said has been lies, and they have collected more than $50 million of donations.
Ken, אני אספתי ילדים ותינוקות בלי ראש.
Our volunteers, when they came into the homes and they saw the children beheaded,
if they were not busy raping women, they would have continued to Jerusalem.
Because of these unverified lies, and this has been reported by the Israeli media, Haaretz, Channel 13, and Time of Israel.
תראי, ושם את עושות אותי עוד שתי תמונות, באמת, חוץ מתום, אין שם שום דבר אחר, שנשחטו ופשוט תהרגו אותם.
Pregnant women cut open.
גם זה לא קרה. לראות שגם באיחוד הצלה הפיצו בזמנו את הסיפור הפיקטיבי על כך שתינוק הוסם בתוך תנור.
You've seen burn body, but in the same time in Israel people talk about the Hannibal directive, where the Israelis went in and indiscriminately they shot hellfire missiles from Apache, they shot shells from tanks. There is an Israeli survivor, her name is Yasmin Porat. She came on a podcast and she talked about being in a house with 14 other hostages and 40 terrorists, and said everybody was alive, and then the Israelis started to shooting all the 40 the terrorists, and 12 out of the 14 hostages were killed. That's an 85% kill rate.
Terroristing everybody?
Now, let's talk about the decapitated babies. According to the official Israeli records, one baby was killed, Mila Cohen, 10 months, 12 children from the age to 2 to 9, 36. All of these were refuted. Even the New York Times piece and The Guardian retracted them because they were taken for rights. Does it make it less horrific that there are just 759 just killed, most of them killed by firepower from the Israeli? No, it's still horrific. But you created that image so people now are prepared and prepped to go in and kill everyone. This is blind rage. The 40 decapitated baby became a myth and everybody now believes. So if I talk about them, nobody wants to
free
them.
I don't think everybody believes.
But it was used as an emotional way to suck money, 50 million, and to allow people to say, all right, go and kill everybody.
This is exactly what we were actually, you were refuting and debunking on our last show. Now he's got to commend him for bringing Basim on, who's probably quoting your work and watching. Have you ever met Basim?
I have Yusuf? Not.
I'm sure he's watching your reporting, and he's sitting there debunking this right next to Chris Cuomo. That is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's gotten to the point where mainstream Israeli media is acknowledging this was all false, and they can do it because now it's too late.
That's the important point, but that's mainstream media on there. It's reporting.
Yeah. I mean, you saw a clip from Channel Israel. 13, from Israel's national broadcaster. You saw a roundtable panel, panel yesterday on Channel 14, which is the pro Netanyahu right wing genocide channel, even acknowledged that the cutting of the fetus out of a pregnant woman was fake. But it's like, they can do that.
They even acknowledge it. They even acknowledge this.
Yeah, they acknowledge it, but it doesn't matter now because it's too late.
The lie has been already propagated, pushed. It's out there. You know what I compare it to? It's like certain people want to believe the lie, and they've embraced it, and they fell in love with it. Now it's time to let go. They don't want to let go of the lie.
Exactly. Well, yeah, there are a lot of people who exist in a sort of Zionist echo chamber who still believe all these lies. But even for those who don't believe them, but who propagated them in the beginning, they did their work. Chris Cuomo did his work in a small way. Jake Tapper did his work on a much higher level at CNN and no longer has to push this atrocity propaganda. But the whole point of it was to just create space in October for Israel to cross all the lines, all the boundaries of what was previously considered unacceptable, and to, in many ways, reenact the atrocities they fabricated against the defenseless population of Gaza. And they got to do that. So 5 months on, there's still no actual pressure for a ceasefire from the administration in Washington, even as these lies have been just debunked. So I feel kind of like I'm beating a dead horse, debunking this again and again, and they still keep recycling these reports and claiming that it's really true. But at this point, the biggest lies we see are happening in broad daylight, being spewed from the mouth of Joe Biden or whoever controls him. which is that, you know, the U.S. is committed to getting aid into Gaza, or that the U.S. Or Kamala Harris calling for a ceasefire. It's like the lies get bigger every week. Mainstream media is now calling it out and nothing happens.
And Floyd decided to come to Israel.
We are winners. I'm happy to be here.
If you want to summarize what United Hatzalah is all about, 90 seconds.
American boxing champion Floyd Mayweather is showing his support for Israel. He's also received a life-saving award from United Hatzalah Emergency Response Service after he sent that plane delivery of medical equipment during the war. He's also been meeting with emergency volunteers in Jerusalem, as you can see on your screen. And here he is at a restaurant in the capital, dancing with chefs as they make a popular Israeli dish.
Probably a Palestinian dish.
They certainly look like they are having a lot of fun. We leave you with those images.
That's disgusting. You have people like Muhammad Ali. This is why he's remembered as an American hero, and he was standing on the side of justice and truth with the Palestinians. You see Floyd Mayweather, he's going over there. Is this the organization that you blew the cover on them scamming people like $50 million? And Floyd Money Mayweather, he's there directly connected with them? Is this a scam organization?
They're a competitor with Zaka, the main scammers, but United Hatzalah is the group that invented the lie of the baby baked in an oven in Kibbutz Be'eri, which was instantly discredited. And they were at, this lie was spun out by Eli Beer, who you showed earlier, their director, at a fundraiser at the Sands Casino, founded by Sheldon Adelson, in Las Vegas, of the Republican Jewish Coalition funded by the Adelson family. So Adelson money is going directly through United Hatzalah to Floyd Money Mayweather. And I mean, you look at those images and I'm concerned that those images fuel anti-Semitism, because you're looking at obviously corrupt, ultra-Orthodox hucksters in a country that identifies as a Jewish state, I think wrongly, as the Jewish state, the same way the Islamic State identified itself. And they're basically paying a guy with obvious CTE, who has no idea where he is, who's only about that money, to run cover for this criminal operation. And that's what we're seeing. We see it so often. We saw it in South Dakota earlier with this governor wearing a white mini skirt who has had this makeover from trad mom to, you know, hot conservative thought, Kristi Noem, who wants to be president or vice president. And she's meeting with a bunch of Israel lobbyists and modern Orthodox guys in her office, basically paying her to pass a bill that would render criticism, criminalize criticism of Israel and define it as anti-Semitism. This is the kind of stuff that disgusts me, and it makes me concerned that people would draw the wrong conclusions and collectively blame Jews for rolling back the First Amendment or just paying people to support crimes, when this is really about a demonic cult called Zionism that does not represent all Jews. And we have another issue here. Sorry to go on, but the other issue is that there are a lot of fighters who are supportive of Palestine who are getting a lot more shine than Floyd Mayweather. I mean, the UFC world is open to views that support Palestine. And you'll see after like a Dagestani fighter wins a major fight, he will send a shout out to Palestine and condemn the war. Bilal Muhammad is about to have a major fight. This is a Palestinian fighter who's been in the game for a long time. Floyd Mayweather is yesterday's news. So I think that's the reason they were looking to get a major fighter to Israel to do this propaganda phony hoopla trip.
I think it's just disgusting. And to see just on the other side, you have a genocide happening. You have how many now children, like almost 20,000. And that's not including how many are under the rubble that we don't know about, displaced, left orphans. And he's there dancing, doing the, you know, whatever dance you call it. And And just on the other side, you have this genocide. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. And then you actually uncover that this group that's known for exploiting, scamming, spreading these lies as atrocity propaganda, is this the same organization that is Zaka led by a rabbi?
Yossi Landau's their most identified, but you're talking about an ultra orthodox kind of businessman named Yehuda Meshi Zahav.
Yes, that's the one. He's like the orthodox Jeffrey Epstein. The orthodox Jeffrey Epstein, is this the same organization?
This is a competitor organization.
That's the competitor one.
So okay. Basically, you have Zaka. They wear orange vests and they go out on motorbikes. And if someone has like a road accident and dies anywhere in Israel, they'll collect their body parts and make sure they're disposed of properly according to like kosher burial traditions. And United Hatzalah, they wear green vests and go out in motorbikes and do the same thing. And both of them were like going belly up before October 7th. Then all of a sudden, there was this surprise attack in the southern communities. They rushed down there. They got there before the army in many cases. The Israeli military has a thing called the Home Command, and they have their own actually trained forensic experts, burial and body parts disposal specialists. And Zaka and United Hatzalah got down there before they did, displaced them. The army allowed them to have free reign in the kibbutzim that were attacked. And they've been exposed in Israeli media like Haaretz for holding fundraisers where they were actually staging scenes, taking dead bodies and staging them to make it look like somebody was raped or something horrible happened to somebody. And they were showing potential donors in real time while they were on their phone, these crime scenes. And these are disgustingly corrupt organizations. They share members. So you could just say they're the same thing. But Zaka, which is responsible for so many of the fake debunked rape claims, their founder, who was given the Israel Prize, which is the biggest prize in Israel, by the current defense minister, Yoav Gallant, who died in 2022, this founder, Yehuda Meshi Zahav, as you said, he was known as the Haredi or Orthodox Jeffrey Epstein because he was such a prolific sexual predator, preying on boys and girls, adults, children, whoever, anyone he could get his hands on in the kind of closed off ultra-Orthodox community in Jerusalem. And after he got his Israel Prize, all the rumors that had been circulating came out in the Israeli press. He tried to kill himself and failed, went into a coma, and then he finally died in 2022. And so the irony is just, you can't even overstate the irony of this group cooking up rape allegations. It's such a projection when their founder is like one of the most prolific rapists in a society, by the way, Israeli society, that has a real problem with sexual abuse, a real problem. And there are record numbers of women being killed in domestic violence since October 7th within Jewish Israeli society. It's being reported in Hebrew media. Yet they're constantly projecting their own perversions and crisis onto Palestinians to justify what they're doing in Gaza, where you see, and I'm sure you've seen it, your viewers have seen it, all these soldiers rifling through the underwear drawers of Palestinian women in Gaza whose homes they've taken over, and then wearing their underwear, putting their underwear on walls. And they want to convince us that the Palestinians are the perverts.
What would you say to Floyd Money Mayweather? Do you think he's knowingly, does he know this stuff that you've been reporting on? Do you think he's just, at the end of the day, I mean, what should he do now? If this is probably get to him, I mean, should he continue being a poster child and for this scam organization?
I don't think Floyd Mayweather, and this has been like the case with him throughout his entire career, and everybody in the boxing world knows it. He doesn't believe in anything except money. I see him as like a zombie. And those are the kind of people that Israel is able to most exploit and turn into poster children.
That's how they got is he implicit because he's getting paid by the scam money?
Totally. I mean, but look at Richie Torres, the congressman from the Bronx. The Israel lobby found an openly gay Puerto Rican guy who happened to have some residence in the Bronx, and they just paid him and have created this spokesman for genocide who will do anything they want at any time while representing one of the poorest communities in the country. And he never talks about the Bronx. He doesn't represent his constituents. He's just there, and no one can compete with him at this point because he has so much money in his campaign coffers. Cory Booker was kind of the same thing in New Jersey. I mean, I can just go on and on about all these tools that they've found, but I don't have anything to say to those people because it's like, I'm asking you to give up millions of dollars and fame to actually demonstrate some humanity and critical thinking. And a lot of people just won't do that.
Those are the two words right there. Humanity, critical thinking. Let's go on. I know we're almost out of time. I want to get your, we're going to play a little game with Max Blumenthal. It's called Name That Song. And this is one of the most popular songs out there. I've seen you do some rapping out there. This is a hit rap song that is out there.
Is this Shagar or something?
I'm going to go ahead and let you see some of the viewing audience, some of the lyrics from the song. Let's see if you can name that song. The Army of God, he doesn't just act cruelly. He's more of a woover.
Yeah, this is... this is, I think it's called Shagar, or like massive strike. I think that's Hebrew for massive strike. And it's by this. Yeah.
Israel, not Palestine. We've come to charge the price.
Am I supposed to like name the song or what's happening here?
Yeah. Do you know the name of this song?
I think I just said it. Am I right?
Yeah. We've come in uniforms and we didn't come to play from kisses to guns until Gaza is erased. And you made a good point. You tweeted about this.
Yeah, Shagar. Means like launch in Hebrew. Shagar.
What was your reaction when you're seeing some of these lyrics? I mean, this is like a genocidal song. You're seeing talking about erasing Gaza. It's talking about like, you know, some really genocidal lyrics here, and they're openly, this is something that's shooting rockets like rain, and in Jenin there is not the plague of the firstborn. There are a lot. What was your reaction when you first saw this?
You can't this? Play it because you're afraid of being demonetized or like because it's copyrighted.
We'll try to get it up. I don't have it here with us, but
I'll send it to you right now.
אהלן וסהלן יא רזה יורים כמו גשם טילים וג'נים הצבא של השם הוא לא סתם מתאכזר הים מהאוויר
נדאג שגזה תהיה פעם
שאין לו פלסטין.
What do you think? Well, I mean, there's nothing surprising here except how cringeworthy Israeli rap is. I mean, they're like so behind, but I mean, it's just tacky. But this is the mood of mainstream Israeli society. There was a poll last week by the Israeli Democracy Institute, and 72% of Jewish Israelis want the Israeli military to go into Rafah and just go all the way, which would be the biggest massacre we've probably seen in our lifetimes, period, just period, anywhere in the world. It would be the biggest massacre, and that's what they want. And so the songs that are popular, the soundtrack of Jewish Israeli society, particularly among youth, who are more fascistic than older Israelis because of the education system and because of military indoctrination, because they all have to serve in the military, and just the situation Israel's in internationally. The soundtrack is genocidal. So this track has been downloaded like watched by 2 million people on YouTube. And there's another genocidal track called Harbu Darbu, which has 20 million views. There was a song I featured in my video, What is Wrong with Israelis? You can find on our channel at The Gray Zone, our YouTube channel, where I kind of do a documentary compilation of the genocidal insanity that is consuming Israeli society. And it had children singing for the extermination or the annihilation of Gaza. It was produced by the national broadcaster of Israel, Khan News, and it was eventually removed because it just kind of looked bad to have children. But here you see in this track, you have three rappers. And I mean, this is like kind of an interesting, I think an interesting demographic point about Jewish Israeli society. You have three rappers One of them is from the Ethiopian community. He's either from the Ethiopian community or the Black Hebrew Israelite community that sometimes participates in the military. They are like at the bottom of the totem pole in Jewish society. Then you have an Arab, a guy who looks Arab. He's Mizrahi. He's an Arab Jew. They're just above the Ethiopians on the totem pole. Then you have a Ashkenazi woman, but it looks like she's from Eastern Europe, like from Russia or Poland or something like that. Like they're above, just above the Arab Jews. And normally, if you take away the Palestinian issue, those groups are fighting against each other internally to rise up the totem pole, and they don't have much in common, and they don't really like each other. And the Israeli, you know, white Israelis call the Ethiopians Kushim, which is almost like the N-word. So then something happens with Palestinians, you know, and then they all unite. And that's the time that Israelis come together and all the differences fade, and it gives the meaning, them, the state, the Jewish state, the so-called Jewish state, it gives it meaning. And that's what kind of keeps it going forward. And in the military, those sort of in those groups that are sort of oppressed or discriminated against within Jewish Israeli society, they can demonstrate how loyal they are to the overclass and to the state by brutalizing Palestinians. So I've seen in the West Bank, like olive farmers who were coming under attack by settlers, and then the Israeli soldiers show up, and you can see the olive farmers get afraid when they see that there's an Ethiopian commander with a bunch of troops who are white or Arab Jews, because he's going to have to demonstrate how much, how hard he is, how harsh he is to the Palestinians in order to maintain their respect. So there are so many disturbing dynamics and levels of racism and fascism within that video that really gets to the heart of what Zionism is in practice, and why, as long as a Zionist system exists, it's going to be positioned for genocide.
Do you know this next person here? Before we conclude, I want to get your reaction. This is somebody who's caught the attention of even Elon Musk.
So I kind of couldn't believe it in the book. You let the cat out of the bag. You're actually a Mossad agent.
Oh, you know, you are the first person on my media tour to actually either have read that far into the book or to mention it. I thought it would be the top story in every show.
He pops up always in my feed. He's really pushing a lot of hate, division, and lies, a lot of these lies that you've uncovered. Do you know who this person is, Saad?
Yeah, it's Gal Saad, right? I didn't know much about him until all of a sudden, he was being pushed into my feed when you click on the For You tab.
Yours also.
Yeah.
Wow. You don't follow him, do you? I don't follow him. He was pushed in my feed.
Yeah. So basically, Elon Musk came under attack because he made some stupid anti-Semitic comments, and he's always liking some like fanatically right-wing stuff. So he comes under attack after October 7th by Jonathan Greenblatt, the ADL. He first tries to push back. He supports the hashtag ban the ADL, which for me was like hilarious. Like I was like, great. Finally, some billionaire is finally like giving them their just desserts. But then he realizes that he's having advertiser flight. He's losing revenue. He's bleeding revenue. And suddenly he pulls back from that. And we start to get these accounts like Gal Saad mined into our feed, like they're trying to put a chip in our brain or something. Remember, and do you know Aviva Klompas? Don't you see her constantly? She's this woman who's the ultimate.
Maybe if I see her.
She's a Zionist propagandist who's just, if you follow a bunch of Palestine-related content on Twitter, she's going to be pushed into your feed on the For You tab. I didn't know who he was until then. I noticed that he was, as you said, pushing racism, divisive content, very Islamophobic content. And then we find out that he's a Mossad agent. It makes total sense.
Wow. Let's go ahead and end with our old friend here, Michael Ravenport.
All right, I'm in Jerusalem at the Machane Yehuda Market. I'm looking for the apartheid, okay? In Israel, I am looking for the apartheid. I just asked all these people, not one person is able to tell me where the apartheid is. So I'm asking you on this platform, since you're so smart, to tell me where I can go to actually witness the apartheid. You guys know where the apartheid is? No idea. No one knows where the apartheid is, but I'm sure you can tell me. Let me know where the apartheid in Israel is. The best tour guide in Israel, Franny.
Yeah.
We've been looking all day.
Yeah.
Where is the apartheid?
Oh, the apartheid's right there. Do you see that sign? It says entry forbidden for Israeli citizens. And if you keep driving, you'll see another sign that says do not come here if you're Israeli. It's dangerous and it's against the law. There you have it.
There's the apartheid.
Your reaction to Michael Ravenport looking for the apartheid? I think he was saying apartheid. What was he saying? I think he was pronouncing it wrong. But the apartheid that's happening, this has been documented by human rights organizations. You speak about it. You've spoken about it. Scholars have, and he's looking for it. But then he flips it and he says it's actually on the other side. At the other video, what do you? What's your response to that?
Well, I mean, it's obvious he has the IQ of a toaster oven, and his sheer presence is so discrediting to all white guys who want to be down with hip hop. Like, he just makes them all look so bad that they need to like disown him. But you see, he can't even pronounce the name of the Machane Yehuda market, which is the major Jewish market in West Jerusalem. He hasn't gone to East Jerusalem, so he won't see apartheid. I mean, just one example I can give in East Jerusalem of apartheid, but I'll give three examples really quick. One is the center of life policy, where if he went across towards just to Damascus Gate from Machane Yehuda, you could walk there in like 15 or 20 minutes towards Sheikh Jarrah. People there are being pushed out of their homes who've lived there since the foundation of the state of Israel, because the state decided that there were titles that Jews could produce from before the state in the Ottoman era that showed that they had those homes. And they're just taken, their belongings are taken out by settlers from the United States, and they're just thrown out in the street with nowhere to go. Other Palestinians there who I've known have to constantly prove to the Jerusalem municipality that they live in their home full time. And if they don't, their home will be given away. You go to the West Jerusalem, right around Machane Yehuda Market, and there are like ghost apartments of wealthy Jewish Americans who are never even there. No Palestinian can take their home. Then you have the national law, or the law of entry, which prevents Palestinians from East Jerusalem from marrying Palestinians from the West Bank and having family. So they have to live in these squalid ghettos like the Shufat refugee camp or Kufar Aqab, which get no resources because they don't exist within the Jerusalem municipality on the side of the apartheid wall that the Jerusalem municipality could provide services, and they're not in the Palestinian Authority. So if there's a fire in Kufar Aqab, for example, the Jerusalem fire brigades can't get there because there's this giant apartheid wall, and they can't call in the Palestinian Authority because it's not their authority. It's technically in the Jerusalem municipality. So that's the only place that Palestinian couples can live if one of them has an address in Jerusalem and the other has an address in the West Bank. That's pure apartheid. And I've been there. There's like trash piling up everywhere. The roads are like impossible to drive in because there's so many potholes. And then where's Michael Rappaport standing? He's standing at the edge. He's in the occupied West Bank under international law. It's militarily occupied by Israel. He's with an American settler who thinks that it's her land because of the Bible, which Michael Rappaport doesn't even believe in, probably has never even read, can't speak a word of Hebrew. And she speaks with an American accent. And she's mocking Palestinians on the other side of that sign who are in Area A. So Area A is the only area in the West Bank where Palestinians are allowed to live without having their homes be threatened or claimed by settlers. And those are the major population centers like Ramallah, Jericho, Nablus. And Jewish Israelis are warned on those signs not to go in there because it could be dangerous for them because they're hated. Why wouldn't they be hated? They're stealing everyone's home. Then you have Area B and Area C. Palestinians living in Area C are just, every day for them is like October 7th. Their homes are invaded by the army, by settlers. They're constantly being terrorized. This is like the Jordan Valley where the Bedouins are being pushed off their land. Their water's being stolen. Area B, that's like the edges of the cities and the towns. And them too, like settlers are taking their land constantly. So the idea that that sign, because it's warning Jewish Israelis not to go in, is apartheid, just shows how ridiculous and foundationless modern Israeli propaganda is. And of course you have, again, like we were talking about with Floyd Mayweather, you have someone with like visible signs of brain damage in Michael Rapaport that Israel has to resort to as their propaganda poster child to convey their message to Americans. And that shows how low it's gone. Like, look at the quality of the celebrities Israel was able to get after 1967. They were like major A-listers. Like Barbara Streisand was playing, singing, doing concerts for Israel. Now they can't get anyone. It's like, it's a badge of shame. You have Jonathan Glazer, the director of one of the most consequential Holocaust films in years, getting up at the Oscars and saying, "I refute my Jewishness and the Holocaust being used to justify occupation." And what was the Zionist response to that? They couldn't really muster up a response. So they just lied and said, "How dare he refute his Jewishness?" They just decided to completely lie and misrepresent his quote because there was nothing they could say. Their propaganda is just failing on every level. And there's another reason why they did that, because they're afraid of members of their own cult realizing that something is deeply wrong. So they need to just keep these lies active, have everyone within the Zionist echo chamber, within the Zionist algorithm on Twitter or Instagram, just seeing that this director refuted his Jewishness, even though he didn't. And what he said was actually a defense of the memory of the Holocaust in the face of another Holocaust in Gaza.
One more thing came to mind. I forgot to ask you this question. I wanted to show you this video because it links back to what we were talking about earlier with Rabbi Shmoly, Unholy Shmoly, Candace Owen. She came out and said something. And do you think because of her statements like this, that this is also fueling them going after her?
Bank really for these wars is because Americans don't know anything. We know very after 9/11. I think about it now, the propaganda to make me afraid of Muslims. I can't even imagine being a Muslim growing up after 9/11 in America, because I know how I felt about them. And I was young, I was 11 years old. But that beating every day in our heads that every Muslim was a terrorist was the idea that you got.
I make jokes about it, but like, you don't understand. Like, I had to shave my face to go to airports. My mom would make me shave my face. Yeah. Like at school, like I was so young. This is actually funny. I had a mustache in like the fourth grade, and my mom made me nair it because she was like, "You got it," like, because it was really, really bad. Because whatever you're like, the household would say the kids have no filter, so they would just say whatever they wanted to me. But at a young age, I realized that I myself as a Middle Eastern was racist too. I was like, "Oh, it's not us, it's them." And so I would point my finger out of fear. I'm like, no, they did it. But then I went to, what country did I just go to? Sorry.
Canada?
I went to Saudi Arabia. And I don't think I've ever been to a country that was more hospitable to me. Mm. The love that I got, the respect that I got, I literally sat back and I hung myself out to dry on a podcast. I go, "Wow, I was brainwashed. I was so scared. I didn't bring her."
Yeah, same. And so first I want to say, just like, to all Muslims growing up during that time in America, I am sorry on behalf of America
for
the way that you were treated. It is so unacceptable. When I go back and I re-examine that propaganda, that brainwashing that took place in the classroom to make me scared of something, I didn't even know what a Muslim was. I remember going to the airport and someone was a Hindu and I was scared of him. Like, "Oh my God, they're gonna take this off of his head, blah, blah." I thought that was a Muslim, right? Mm-hmm. There was no education about anything. And the reason for that, you know, he who controls the textbooks controls the entire country, in my view, right? It was because everything that we did responding to 9/11 should be assessed as whether or not they were crimes against humanity. We bombed 1 million Iraqi civilians. We killed 1 million Iraqis. What were we doing in Iraq? The Saudis were on the plane. They just said there's weapons of mass destruction, and then they never found them. But in the process, they killed 1 million Iraqi civilians, right? And it made us think it's okay to just keep bombing Muslims. That was the purpose to me of that educational propaganda and brainwashing, is that we feel nothing for.
Your thoughts, and we'll conclude with that.
Yeah, I mean, well, what's significant is Candace Owen works for Ben Shapiro, who is essentially, he's an Israeli cutout.
Wow.
What is it about Ben Shapiro that makes him so significant? Is it his talent or his looks? And his charisma. I mean, what? He doesn't. He's not that talented. He's not that charismatic. I guess he works hard because he's always on. He just got a ton of right-wing industry money, money from, you know, frackers in Texas to start this network, Daily Wire. And he pushes kind of like social conservatism and neoconservatism. He brought her on at a time when she was less politically aware, and she's taken the red pill and completely gone over all the lines that Ben Shapiro set. And Rabbi Shmuley's like, hey, you're a Zionist too, and you're not firing her. You're not canceling her. And she has something on Ben Shapiro. I don't know what it is, or it may be that Ben Shapiro doesn't want to seem weak in the face of someone like Rabbi Shmuley, but he's not letting her go. And she's had Norman Finkelstein on her show. I mean, she's pushing the line of what was previously acceptable. And I think it's coming from a place of personal conviction. I can't understand where else it would come from her, but it's a major career risk. And Rabbi Shmuley is also obsessing over her. So she's responded by calling him the unholy rabbi. Now let's just interrogate that insult. I think there's actually something to it. Is Rabbi Shmuley actually a rabbi? Because as I reported, when he was coming after me back in 2016, he took out like a full page ad in the New York Times with Adelson money to smear me. I'll spare the backstory because it takes.
Well, he even came after you.
Like obsessively. Wow. And I had a confrontation with him outside AIPAC that's online if you look for it. And what I found in my investigation of Rabbi Shmuley, I don't know why I'm calling him a rabbi, is that he studied within the Chabad sect. And then he became kind of a sort of not only a race hustler, but like a grifter who was looking to make money any way possible. And after he got on Oprah and did Shalom in the Home, he started publishing all these books. And much of his audience wasn't Jewish. So he wrote a book on why Jesus was such a great figure and why Jews should revere Jesus. Not worship Jesus, but why they should revere him. And so his rabbinical teachers in Chabad issued essentially a fatwa, an edict, declaring that no one is allowed to listen to anything Shmuley says in any religious setting, at least any synagogue controlled by Chabad. And he was basically banished by his Torah instructors, the people who made him a rabbi. And the rabbi of the official great synagogue of London, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, he's the most famous rabbi in England, banned Shmuley from his synagogue as well because of Shmuley's financial corruption and his history of sort of toxic statements. So is Shmuley even a rabbi? Does he have a congregation? Who even listens to him? And if we look at Shmuley's activity on Twitter, I think he's defacing himself and making a fool of himself and trying to draw various influencers into conflict with himself just to maintain relevance when he actually has none within the Jewish religious world.
Wow. Very deep. Thank you so much. I want to go ahead and again, give an invitation to Chris Cuomo, backed out this time. But if somehow something happens, you don't even have to come on this show because it's not about likes, about popularity. We just want to get the truth out. And I think you need to have a conversation with Max Blumenthal. And this needs to be something that is set up. And somehow if you are able to get out of this, whatever you said, agreement with, and you can do an outside podcast because people are going to be watching now, obviously, if you're doing any other podcast, because you backed out of this one because you're told you can't do any more podcasts. So now if by some chance you are, and maybe you can do it on the PBD, would you go on the PBD with Patrick Ben-David?
I was invited, but I was on my way back from an international trip and they said, you know, we have this one date. So I just couldn't do it, but we've been in talks and I would love to do it. Yeah.
That'd be great. Patrick, my friend, let's make this happen. Let's get this going. I think this would be even better than the Piers Morgan because Morgan just quick. You know, it's short. The Patrick and David, they'll sit down for 2 hours and unpackage a lot of these
things. Just
bring
me on with like five hostile guests and like a studio audience where nobody agrees with me and everything will be fine. Like I don't have any fear of that. And it, Chris, I mean, if you want, we can have a civil discussion. I can give you some education on Israel-Palestine, and you can give me some tips on blasting my lats and glutes and, you know, how to get around the gym. I'm sure I can learn something from you too.
Let's make it happen, guys. Chris, let's make it happen. Patrick, but David, guys, get this to him. Let's set this up. Let's go ahead and have it happen and turn on the humanity, because in all seriousness, there is something that is happening now. It's a modern day genocide. The slogan, never again. And now your silence is your complicitness. You're seeing it happen and you're being silent. You're not doing anything about it. Where's your heart? Where's your humanity? Thank you for your humanity, Max Blumenthal.
Thanks, Eddie.
We've been told that they're out to kill us all.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. We went to the streets to ask Americans about Islam. Here's what they said. Do you know anything about Islam?
No.
Do you know anything about Islam?
No, sadly.
Do you know anything about Islam?
Not really.
Do you know anything about Islam?
No, sorry.
Do you know what Islam means?
Islam? No. We've been told that they're out to kill us all.
That's what you've been told, that Muslims are out to kill you all.
Well, that's what they say on TV.
Anything.
I know it's in the Middle East, isn't it?
Well, then you're going to have four wives.
Brothers and sisters, as you can see, there are so many Americans who don't know about Islam. We need your help to change that. Help us to build the Deen Center, the first mega Dawah center in America. Click to donate right now. May God Almighty Allah reward all of you. I cannot leave without giving you a gift. If you're not yet Muslim and you're tuning in to see what these Muslims are talking about and you like a free copy of the Quran, go ahead and visit thedeenshow.com. We'll take care of the postage and everything and get it delivered to you. And if you still have some questions about Islam, call us at 1-800-662-4752. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.